Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Null Form Number 7 by Dem Mikhailov. Translated by Colin Parker. Narrated by Andrew B. Whirlin. Prologue. Papa? Papa, where are you taking me?
Papa? Oh, my boy. I'm no longer your papa. I am a zombie. And you are my ration.
Ration? Is ration a good thing, Papa, or a bad thing?
A good thing, of course, my boy. A ration has a clearly defined fate. You will definitely achieve your aim in life, and that is always a good thing.
I'm so glad, but when? When will I achieve this aim?
Do you see the ruins ahead?
Yes.
Everything will happen there.
So let's step up the pace, Papa.
What can you see, kid?
A corpse.
It's being eaten by crabs. And what's that there in its belly, sticking out of the hole above its belly button?
It looks like a pincer. The crab got stuck in the ripped open belly and was squished. Funny,
being squished by your food.
We never have enough food.
So the corpse ate a living being?
Does it ever happen that the dead eat the living?
Evidently it does.
But that's not right.
Tell that to the sated corpse, kid. Do you see it smiling at you?
It's had its lips chewed off, and its tongue.
And it's still sated and smiling. So, which do you think won? The dead or the living?
I think there's something shiny in its pocket, which needs retrieving.
That's why you'll go far, kid. You see the most important thing, and don't get sidetracked by the dumb smiles of the sated when you're hungry. Good. I'll drag it over with the pike pole and hold it, and you check its pockets. And this time we divide it into two equal parts, not according to seniority or fairness. You will definitely go far. It's a deal. 60-40. Plus a wise piece of advice for gratis.
Fine. What's the advice?
Never be taken in by free advice, kid. It always turns out very expensive. I'll hold it. You be quick about it, before this chunk of meat jelly gets torn apart on the rocks. I had taken it down during a run around Celestial Park Number 7. It is not hard to select a convenient moment, when you know your victim's none too busy and adamantly adhered to schedule for the day. Mr. Ed Irving, a.k.a. Edward Thomas Irving, a clever and cunning freelance journalist, hiding behind the verified yet anonymous digital signature at the foot of each of his articles posted on Journey to the Abyss, the world's most accessed news portal. The portal differed from others in that it posted only confirmed information, and if it made a mistake, it would immediately apologize and post a retraction, generally trying in every way to be a solid network media outlet and earning multi-millions monthly income for its creator. Peter Falk, 100 years of age, and not about to take his foot off the gas. Mr. Falk always safeguarded his journalists, paying them generously and religiously preserving their anonymity. This was why the merely 27-year-old, yet already widely known journalist Ed Irving prospered, concealing his real name behind the signature Acid Shark 17 and an avatar of a green-toothed shark's head in red-tinted glasses.
God!
Acid Shark 17 said, as he ceased his tumblings down the soft grassy slope and lay spread eagle on the emerald lawn.
Are you all right?
The mouse asked of the cat. Only a fool would have thought our collision accidental. Well, I never. How polite. He had not alluded to that bitch mother, but to the Lord, and he had not called me a freaking bastard, asking instead if I was all right. That is what a correct upbringing means. It was direct, correct, and inconvenient to do what I was about to do. My kick transformed his prominent bony nose into something far smaller, tearing his left cheek at the same time as well as splitting an eyebrow, knocking out a couple of perfect teeth, and releasing bloody syrup from his lips and nostrils. Doubled up, the lad covered his face with his elbows and began to tremble in a brief afterglow of pain. The kick in the face was like a rum cocktail from Pablo, the bald barkeep, who worked in one of my favorite hangouts. One sip, and you felt your eyeballs crawling with a crackle from their sockets while your balls tried to make their own getaway from the scene of the impending explosion. Boom. And tears accompanied a feeling of warm gratitude towards this freaking world. And another minute later, we were ready for the next sip. It drew you in. Shark seemed to like it, and slowly moving his hands, red with blood and sticky with snot, he peered at me through narrowed eyes in expectation of a sweet, blinding encore. Strike. Hunkering down, I produced a tiny injector from my coat, and after waiting for 10 seconds, I injected a painkiller and a relaxant. Time was of the essence, for this place was off the beaten track, but there were plenty of runners around obsessed with healthy living. The 7 Petals of Health. This was the general name given to the 7 parks situated on the tops of the accommodation towers connected by suspended avenues. The parks were thickly planted with greenery, both living and seemingly so, which painstakingly cleaned the air and produced oxygen. Access to the parks, obviously, was paid, but Shark could afford it, just as he could afford his lavish apartments above the cloud line, which automatically granted the crazy, expensive opportunity to delight daily in the real sun, which so rarely burst down as far as the perishing earth. On top of which, one could easily germinate the pit of a shitting avocado on the sunny windowsill and walk around all puffed up with pride.
Oh, God.
Edit, I said with a sigh. Acid Shark 17. You got seriously lucky today, you douchebag. Even after what you've done, I won't be cutting your balls off to make you cook them over a low heat and eat them. And believe me, I've already done that twice.
Oh, God. I don't understand you. I don't even know you.
But I know you. You're a journalist.
Your mistake,
the lad began, but stopped himself short when he noticed my expression. Yesterday you wrote a deceitful article, your first such article. After all, you've always been proud of your reputation. Isn't that right, Shark? But this time, you were offered so much for an invited article that you just couldn't refuse. Isn't that right?
Oh, God. Oh, almighty one. They told me it was true. My source.
You don't have a source. I shook my head. You can't have a source, because you made it all up yourself. And in your long circumspect article, you little shit, you had a good go at the Atoll of Life Corporation. Several such articles appeared yesterday, of which yours was just one. And the cumulative effect was a small nosedive in the affairs of the Atoll Corporation. 12 small but important deals falling through, as well as negotiations with a couple of important people. Surely you can't have thought that after something like that, nobody would come after you to rip your heart out through your asshole.
Oh, God.
Do you know why you're still alive? Do you know how I know your real name? No? Oh, it's funny. I didn't even have to go looking for you, you freaking vile, pompous cockroach. Mr. Falk himself informed us about you. Mr. Falk, your boss, your protector. And I must say, he was enraged when he saw that article this morning. He had to apologize for a very long time to the Atoll of Life Board of Directors as he hung you out to dry.
That's impossible.
Oh, it's possible. Because there's something you don't know, you little shit, which is that Peter Falk has signed a contract concerning the upcoming resettlement of the atoll to a special area. On top of which, he has contributed an indecently large sum of money. Thanks to your boss, the corporation has been able to buy up and resettle certain endangered beasties. And then your article.
Oh, God.
He told me to quote you a specific phrase known only to you and him. He has one for each of his trusted journalists. It's a simple phrase. Integrity, brevity, and meticulousness do not go unpaid.
Oh, God.
Your Lord Falk is very angry with you, I said. But he requested that you not be killed, He requested that you be given, you son of a bitch, a single chance to live, which you will take between your run-enhanced buns. And you will wriggle and twist and clench your teeth so as not to let go of it under any circumstance.
Don't kill me. Don't kill me.
You must earn your chance to live. The first thing you must do is name your paymasters. And I am sure you know them. Someone like you would not work with someone they did not know via a dozen stooges. Obviously, the order was passed on to you by one of the operators, but you must know something. And second, immediately after sucking your boss dry, and with tears of gratitude running down your cheeks, you will write a retracting article. Do you understand me?
Yes.
Your paymaster?
I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure, but as far as I gather from various clues and details, the order came from the Salvaged World Corporation.
The name of your contact. What does he look like?
Black, enormous, always smiling. He didn't see me, but I saw him. Those were the conditions. He introduced himself as Teddy Fruit. The surname is definitely made up, but the given name is real. I ran a background check.
Teddy Torch will do anything for money and has a dozen beefy and unsqueamish fighters at his command. They're based in New Singapore, and recently they've been escorting Salvaged World cargoes around their territory, working more or less exclusively with them.
Salvaged World? I asked, openly surprised.
The servers have risen up against the atoll?
But I thought we had an indissoluble friendship and sweet negotiations in full swing.
Are you sure you're not confusing something, you piece of shit?
If you're lying...
No, I swear by God.
Okay, I nodded and rose. Remember, fool, you are now Mr. Falk's slave, so blow him as eagerly as you used to blow your papa.
I've never... And so that I don't remember you sometime, you can do something personally for me.
Right. Let's say 3 long, honest articles describing the activities of the atoll in a positive light on all fronts. The salvation of endangered species, work concerning the correction of habitual criminals' character and memory, the labor-based correction of those who've lost their way, free handouts of food for the hungry, the organization of protected areas, etc. Will you do that?
Yes, yes. 5. I'll write 5 articles. Absolute positivity.
No, I said with a shake of my head. Nobody will believe you if you blow your own trumpet. Let's do it like this. 90% positivity, 5% neutrality, and 5% negativity. And include a load of photos of smiling, busty chicks jumping around in swimming pools in their new houses.
I shall do everything.
Good luck, I nodded, and began my ascent to the path.
That Teddy and his guys? There are so many photos of blood and guts in the Twilight Network. They're psychos. Stay away from them, mister.
Waving a hand, I stepped out onto the path and ran over the abyss towards the Celestial Sixth, where my flyer was parked, trying to figure out if I had enough fuel to get me to New Singapore.
Chapter 1.
Hi. The broad smile of the stranger hanging above me was so bright, I immediately wanted to smash the blinding whiteness to smithereens.
I'll tell you right from the get-go, relax, I do not need anything from you.
Shaking my head, I raised my chin slightly, looked in exhaustion at the fucker impeding my recovery, and said, "If a stranger smiles and says hi, it puts me on my guard and ruins my appetite. If they keep smiling and add, 'I do not need anything from you,' I understand they're a liar, and begin searching their body for a guide mark for my knife."
"Huh?"
The smile faded.
"A guide mark for your knife?"
"Well, yes. Surely you had the foresight to mark the place my knife will enter, huh, cocksucker? Surely you used a magic marker to mark a spot over your heart."
"Wait, what I meant was that I have been heavily influenced by you."
"What? What? You have been deeply influenced by me?" I asked, closely studying the figure of the strange man. "Did I fuck you in your sleep or something? And how was it?"
Huh?
Shall I remove the fool, Commander?
The booze-brightened voice of the orc, bandaged from ankle to brow, came from the crowd gathered by the gas-powered campfire. I shook my head to sedate him, took my bottle containing its complex mixture of isotonics and lemonade, screwed off the cap, and added a tiny blue Recov 15 tablet I'd been given by some old woman, who had also been deeply affected by our business, but had expressed herself simply and succinctly by saying, "You've got balls." "I sometimes get tongue-tied," the smile returned to the stranger's lips, "but I'm still dangerous." "What did you say?" "I am dangerous."
"You are dangerous." I repeated his words, then took an enormous slug, looking at the dangerous man over the top of my tilted bottle. He was a tad over 30, average height, lean but broad-shouldered. Standing tall but not immovable, the body concealed by his baggy clothes seemed always to be moving, yet remained on the spot, the subtle jerkings of muscles demanding movement. I had seen such bodily behavior many times, in sportsmen at the peak of their fitness, and hand-to-hand combatants at the peak of their powers. That was a big deal. His shoulders were constricted by the straps of his backpack, and hanging from his left arm was a needle gun with a slightly larger body than mine had. Instead of heavy boots, he wore light leather moccasins, richly embroidered, and with a sea of tiny multicolored beads. Lightly swarthy skin, a number of old small scars on his cheekbones, a clean-shaven chin, and a similarly clean-shaven head. General impression: neat, well-developed physically, could not only fight but also shoot. Lone wolf. The expression of his eyes was more complicated. His stare seemed calm, yet at the same time, so much was hidden behind that smiling calm. After identifying a couple of the more important feelings pulsing behind his metal armor, I nodded my understanding, and, draining my bottle in several glugs, threw it at his pimp-ass moccasins and closed my eyes again. "My good man," he said, his voice still patient, "I am speaking to you politely. Why do you behave like that towards someone showing you respect?" "For starters, you do not respect me." I shook my head and furrowed my brow from a shooting pain in my neck. "You were brought here by rumors of a crew of newbies who had kicked ass on their first foray into Zombieland and immediately became heroes. For some reason, the particularly sharp pain in your tuchus has been caused by me, rather than my fighters. Second, you are being bullied by envy and jealousy, pecking your theatrically shaven skull with their blunt beaks. You are jealous, and you definitely want something from me, since you stand there unafraid that I will lose my cool and shoot you in the nuts. And since you want something from me, that means you are a liar. What was it you said before, you moccasin-clad cocksucker?" "How threateningly and croakily you speak. Tough stuff indeed." "Uh-huh." I smiled impassively. "Tough. Let's play like this, you ugly fuck with your overinflated girly butt. If you want to discuss something with me, you've got to pay.
A bottle of moonshine, 2 Recov 15 tablets, a tin of shitting peaches, and 2 bottles of water."
"Have you gone mad?" The voice of the dangerous, nameless stranger betrayed its first emotions: anger, irritation, and surprise. He jerked his right leg characteristically, shifting his pelvis slightly, and I was interested to observe his demonstration of how he was about to kick me in the face with a beautiful moccasin. I observed and was silent, while he continued needlessly to warm up his leg muscles. Added to which, he looked as though he thought one kick would be enough to crumble not only my insolent goblin mug, but also the concrete wall behind me. His theatrics lasted 5 seconds. Then they ceased suddenly, his face flushed and embarrassed scarlet, and he slapped his cheek sharply before apologizing.
"Forgive my stupid display, Hero Elb. It sometimes comes tearing out of me, all this, as if I'm kind of saying without words that I'm going to thwack you so hard your brains will be splattered all over the wall, and—"
"Shut up," I barked, feeling my headache worsening. You also owe me a painkiller for my head.
But it's not...
I am not going to repeat my generous proposal, I said, cutting him off. Bring me what I asked for, and I will hear you out. If you get a wiggle on, you might fit into my work schedule. I warn you straight away, it's better not to buy anything from Sam the Toad.
Huh?
It is dishonorable and unforgivable for a real hero to buy anything from Sam the Toad. Run along, badass.
You...
I closed my eyes and drifted off, ignoring his words, which were as yet unsupported by Levy.
Okay.
This spat word was bursting, not with simple emotions, but with something formidable and very threatening.
I'll bring them right away.
It was an amusing cocksucker who could potentially and actually chase away my hospital tedium. And in hospital was precisely where I imagined myself for at least the next 10 hours, as I lay there covered with an old tattered blanket in the dust behind barrack number 1. The system's medical procedures and resources were very practical, and returned the working and fighting vigor to my hands in lively fashion. But even powerful chemicals cannot accelerate the body's regeneration abilities forever. So I took a short pause. At the same time, I was sure I would not be permitted to idly rest up. And since that was the case, I would have to eat lots, including peaches, move as little as possible, listen attentively, and somehow hide the stubborn erection tearing at my pants for 2 hours already. I did not know what the system had injected into my lower back. An extract from a gorilla's furry balls? But half my thoughts were about how good it would be to get laid. In a word, the goblin was on brief medical leave. His crew likewise. Twilight in the sky, twilight in business, twilight on the steel roads and paths. Shit. Once again, all sorts of nonsense crept into my head, just as my fingers crept furtively into my pocket with its drastically reduced supply of tablets in a baggie. No drugs today. I did not remember what I had dreamed or seen in my sickly slumber, but I knew there had been a number of rushes. Disjointed pictures span in my head, oral and visual snippets, echoed voices, wheezing, and laughter. And I fancied unremittingly that this time my memory had managed to capture and retain many more of those shaky recollections. Not bad, not bad. But I would have to give my brain a short breather. Ah, shit. The familiar, otherworldly delight on my tongue had another explanation. A new flashback was just around the corner. There would be no breather. What the hell is going on with me today?
Wait, I beg of you, take this as well.
In the woman's hands, wet from the toxic tropical downpour, something quivered inside a bundle fashioned from a black trash bag. The listless and puffy face of a 1- or 2-year-old infant was visible through a gap. It was difficult to ascertain its true age, for the denizens of this dying world were reduced to eating anything disgorged onto an oil-slicked beach by the contaminated ocean. The steel door of the armored passenger and freight flyer, whose motors had been illicitly replaced with new ones twice as powerful, began to draw shut. The door was decorated with an image of a coral atoll, the fountainhead of the entire Atoll of Life Corporation, a corporation for whom I began to work unexpectedly, absolutely without payment, and for the sole bizarre reason that I had taken them on faith. The child squealed tunelessly and huskily, and from beneath it leaked something that, judging by the deep brown, almost black color, could not possibly be the urine of a 2-year-old. And what was wrong with its eyes? It was as though they were bleached white. The rustling bundle twitched again, this time more frantically and aggressively. Surprising for such a tiny being. Epilepsy? Plus dehydration? For not even a suicide would drink the rain that fell from these heavens. Just as they would not stand beneath it without reliable protection, this water was poison. Starting forward, the woman grabbed hold of the door and stuck her almost bald head into the gap. The auto mechanism sensed a foreign object and halted the door's motion.
Get lost, native,
The dying idiot woman was flung backward by a strike from Elvis's boot, and she fell into a bubbling puddle and froze there spread-eagled. I looked down. By my boot lay the polythene bundle containing the croaking infant.
Fuck, Elvis said.
The spotty, pale-faced 30-year-old, who actually looked closer to 15, had yesterday killed a whore who had been dancing on his cock. She went tonto from an overdose of Excedrol and tried to gnaw through his throat, and when he knocked her down, she switched her attention to his member. I had watched that shit happen. When I gained access to the surveillance system in his favorite mobile retreat, Old Grade Armored Mobile Classic, known worldwide by its motto, wherever and whencever, I watched the bitch approach him again, ejaculate red foam and a fearful howl, and launch herself at her recent partner's throat. His reaction was lightning quick, and the speed with which he defended his erect penis from the hissing maw was most worthy of respect and appreciation. And having sworn before me and his confessor that, in order to express his deepest thanks to all of existence, he would choke his chicken but once a day and have no actual sex for a month, he was now suffering to think he might possibly have been a mite hasty with such a bold promise. He had bellyached so wearisomely all the way that I lifted his curse, but I warned him that if he mentioned his member one more time, I would make it possible for him to hide his treasure in the back pocket of his pants. Elvis got the picture, and even cheered up somewhat. His cheer, however, was lost when he realized that, despite the fact that he had been screwed over, and by a shitting beggar woman at that, a freaking domed native, fucked by the whole tribe, had quite deliberately unclenched her fingers and thrown her little shit on the floor of the flyer. It changed nothing, and he, as the kicker, would now have to bend down, pick up the baby bundle, and throw it on to its mother's sunken belly. Come on, Elvis. The door twitched briefly, then froze as it ran up against my boot. Come on, Elvis. Shit. He'll die in there. And as a sincere believer, I... Hey, Castar, you're an atheist, aren't you?
I am a Christian of a particular biblical sect. Our prophet, Paul Christians, now inhabits the green peaks of Greenland, and... Shut up! Just throw it out and I'll owe you a bottle of vintage Jack, Moot growled.
No! Somebody, guys!
He received no reply, only sneers. Sneers simultaneously of contrition and derision. It was pointless. None of my personal 10-man crew, apart from me, naturally, would risk throwing a baby to its death. Because everybody to a man believed in freaking superstitions, goosed amulets, tongued talismans, and the power of the fragrant curls from the bosom of your favorite floozy. And in God, of course. Weaklings like that did not throw babies out into the toxic rain, and Elvis would not risk asking me to do it. Come on, Elvis.
Ah, shitting shit.
Elvis leaned down over the tot and said with feeling,
crawl to mama or die. I beg you.
With a jerk, the infant let loose another batch of stinky slurry, twitched its mouth in a strange fashion, and fixed its eyes, protracted into a white haze on Elvis's neck. I blinked. On the steel floor lay a regular dying child, and time was running out. Elvis, make a decision. My words sounded like a serious sentence.
Oh, fuck.
After a moment's hesitation, Elvis suddenly broke out the broadest of smiles, which befitted someone who had apparently found their way out of a hopeless situation.
Let it come with us. I'll give it to the welfare people.
Milksop,
somebody grunted jokingly from the top of the saloon.
Goo goo.
Shut up. Shut up, Moot. Not another word.
Or else what? You'll stress yourself out and begin lactating?
I'm not you. I haven't had my womb cut out and a member sewn on. I'm normal.
And if I've pole danced and slapped my sweaty cans against a few well-heeled mugs, am I not normal? Is that how it is? The muscle-bound figure of Sorg raised itself noiselessly above the welded bench. He had been born a girl, but had trodden the thorny path from...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?